case of Roth against American Family Mutual Insurance Company.
Morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Ted Arts.
Thank you, Your Honor. We're saying essentially that in this case, in a summary judgment situation, the court assumed the function of the jury, drawing an inference of intent to deceive and defraud from the known facts when a jury could have reasonably concluded otherwise. And I think it may help just to look at the practical situation each one of these people was in. In Connie's case, the customer contacted her and said, look, I can't get in there after Christmas. I'm not sure when I get there. Will you sign it for me? At that point, she could have made a different choice. She could have said, no, I'm sorry. I won't sign it for you. You get here whenever you can. You will sign it, and then I'll put it in.
But could I just say, it seems to me that the relevant question here is whether American Family, whether any rational trier of fact could find, based on what's come forward, that it either breached its contract or breached some duty of good faith and fair dealing, which is implicit in contracts under Wisconsin law. And it's hard for me to see how American Family couldn't reasonably have thought that what each one of these people did, Connie and Bonnie, violated the standards of conduct that it's looking for. I mean, I think that this case spins off into lots of details about manuals and agency contracts and who's doing a favor for whom and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, as the district court recognized, both of these people signed other people's names, and in Connie's case at least, under circumstances where she later appears to be dissembling when she's asked about the signature of Ms. Rooney. I don't see where the issue of fact is, why American Family couldn't say, you know, you aren't living up to the standards we're looking for.
I thought it was an objective determination. Let's take Connie. The provision that she was terminated under, which was an immediate termination for dishonesty. And so you get to the word dishonesty. And I thought that the relevant determination would be whether a jury could reasonably conclude that she wasn't dishonest. And it seems to me that because you're construing that word in that contract, that it's an objective determination.
But she did.
Not whether American Family
signed somebody else's name. If I were to sign your name, that's not. I mean, the fact that there may be an excuse for the misrepresentation is different. But, I mean, we can get, if you want to, into the it still seems to me that dishonesty is the kind of thing that was in American Family's bailiwick to decide whether behavior had been dishonest or not. Do you think only if somebody's prosecuted criminally for dishonest behavior that counts?
No, not at all. The standard seems to be intent to deceive or defraud. That's the controlling element in dishonesty.
And so let's take Connie first. First of all, she signs the wrong name. She signs this client's name when she's instructed under the manuals that you are never to do this. Secondly, when asked, she slips and slides around. She doesn't really say what she's actually done. The district court describes it over on page 10 of its opinion. She meets with Montagna and Dudek. She says she didn't know why Rooney's signature would be different on the form. She doesn't know why the name has been misspelled. She isn't saying what you're now saying, oh, well, I signed because Ms. Rooney asked me to. Why can't American Family regard that as a deceptive course of conduct, deserving of immediate termination?
I would say it this way. The presentations in writing with affidavits, letters from Connie, affidavits from the customer Rooney, stated the facts, that and Connie agreed with those facts. Now, if we're going to get at Connie's credibility in making that presentation, which I think is why American Family put the statements from the from the other executive in there. That's for the jury also.
I don't think that's credibility. I mean, I don't see where there's a debate about whether this happened. It's after her termination that she drafts the affidavit saying that it was all done with her, with Rooney's approval.
Right. And the question is, was that credible, that written presentation? She did not draft the affidavit, by the way. That's not actually in the record. But the question is, was that presentation, that written presentation, credible?
No. Well, I'm not sure that is the question, actually. The district court relies on this evidence about the conversation on February 11, 2005 with Montagne and Dudek.
Well, the district court said the facts are agreed, and then said the signing of the name in and of itself means that there was an intent to deceive and defraud. I think that's what the district court's holding is. I don't believe the district court got into the details of the circumstances to justify drawing that inference. I think the district court drew the inference just because the name was signed. And there is agreed writing as to how it was done.
And the fact that the name is signed is in flat contradiction to the manuals. Do not sign the owner's proposed insured name for them, even if the agent has authorization to do so, which he italicizes.
It's in flat contradiction to the manuals, but a flat contradiction of the manuals would not constitute the objective determination of dishonesty that is the only termination ground.
Follow the social convention that if you sign someone else's name, you indicate that you're acting as an agent. You may get a letter from some other lawyer, right, and it's signed the lawyer's name, paren, his secretary's name. There was no indication here. There's no claim, I take it, of any indication of agency in these signatures.
There is no such claim. You're correct. It's simply whether in those circumstances a jury, I think the real test is, could a jury reasonably conclude from exactly what happened that she was, in essence, making an error, contradicting the manual, being negligent, being careless, perhaps, several other things, but that she really wasn't out to deceive or defraud the customer or the company.
Not negligence. She didn't think she was signing an auto rental contract and was surprised to discover that it was a security.
I agree. I meant negligence and not assiduously following the manual. I'm sorry. That's what I meant. And then in Bonnie's case, at the suggestion of her district manager, she set up a transaction for another agent so the agent could get the commission and get the credit for whatever reason they wanted to do that. She went out. She was with the customer. She had the whole thing set up. Now, at this point, she could have made another choice. She could have said, I'm calling up Ray Collins, who's the person I'm doing this for, and I want you, Ray Collins, to come over here, and I want to watch the person. I want you to watch the person sign. Yes, she could have done that.
And isn't that, I mean, look, yes. I mean, particularly in today's climate, it seems to me that companies like American Family have every reason to want to have these accountability measures that it's put into these manuals, whether it's Mr. Collins watching the signature, whether it's making sure when somebody's name is signed to a form, it's really that person who signed it, that people are authorized. Do you think it seems to me that the company has every reason to say, you know, it's important to us, and you are deceiving us if you sign somebody else's name.
Oh, I think there's no question the company has every reason to have all this in the manuals, but the question is the sanction.
And to enforce it strictly, to say this is, and to say we regard failing to follow this as a measure, as an act of dishonesty.
The question is whether this was an act of dishonesty, whether more precisely, whether a jury could reasonably conclude that this was not an act of dishonesty justifying the ultimate sanction, which is the termination of her whole contract. That's what we think the question is.
Okay. So is it your view that the company had to give them 6 months' notice of termination?
In Connie Ross' case, they had to... Well, if they decided to call it undesirable performance...
Had they both been working for 2 years?
Bonnie Roth was subject to the other provision that we alluded to in the reply brief. the at-will provision. Connie Roth was not. So that would be what our position would net.
What was your answer to my question?
Excuse me?
What's your answer to my question?
Yes.
The company just had to give 6 months' notice.
Well, and an opportunity to cure the problem.
No.
Yes.
That's not what the contract says.
This is not curable.
It just says 6 months' notice, doesn't it? So are both of them entitled to 6 months' notice, in your view?
If it's a termination for dishonesty.
They have to do is say, we're terminating you for undesirable performance, and then you get 6 months. So that's the stake here, 6 months. They would have had 6 months more time on the job.
I read that provision as imposing a period for cure. That's how I read that decision. I don't know. I'd tell you I'd have to look at it again.
Well,
be sure about that.
I
don't think
it's brief.
Yes, I know it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, counsel.
That's the reason for the 6 months. Thank you.
Mr. DeNorda.
Yes, please, the court. I represent all of the defendants in this case. Excuse me, it's the last day of my cold. Judge Wood is right. This is a question of contract interpretation. The Hudson and Caniff cases decided by this court indicate that or hold that it is a question of contract interpretation, an issue of law for the district court to determine. Judge Guzman read the contracts. He read the manuals. They say signatures are of utmost importance, obviously. They're selling life insurance policies. And they have the right to say that what is in those manuals, you have to comply with. And they say in the manuals and in the letters to the email, to the agents, which we cited in our brief, that you have to do this, and it might result in dismissal if you don't.
Dishonest is not the best word. Because there's a connotation of financial benefit from dishonesty. It's not inevitable. It just seems like a badly drafted provision.
I don't think so. It says dishonest. In this case, both Connie and Bonnie signed someone else's name.
No, but
they intended.
I say, dishonesty has a connotation. We run into this in other cases. It has a connotation of a financial misbehavior.
That those cases may say that, but I think dishonesty can also be what.
I just don't understand why a big company like this would not use more comprehensive language.
That's apart from the email, is there any place where you define the things that will be regarded as dishonest or deceptive for purposes of the immediate termination language?
No. The contract simply says the manual provisions are incorporated, and the manual says what it says.
Mm-hmm.
If an agent signs a person's name intending to sign their name, misrepresenting to the company then that the people who signed those documents signed them, when they did not, that's dishonest in a common everyday meaning. And that the contract provides for termination without 6 months' notice for acts of dishonesty, violations of insurance laws, or any other action that is unlawful. That's in the two paragraphs we cited in our brief, paragraph 6H2 and paragraph 4I.
Now, your opponent argues that the word dishonesty ought to have some objective external meaning, and actually I think he might even be arguing that it can't be dishonest unless there was a subjective state of mind of dishonesty in the part of the person in question, either Connie or Bonnie. And I'm not sure which of those points of view you are taking. You seem to say dishonesty is anything American Family defines it to be.
No, I'm saying that dishonesty is not following the manual when the manual stresses that you must have the correct person sign a document.
And that sounds like undesirable performance, too. I mean, I'm sure the manual is filled with all sorts of things.
Undesirable performance is, are you meeting your goals? Are you selling enough insurance?
Right, that's what I'm saying. The manual has all kinds of things. You probably require people to show up to work or do a certain amount of work as well. So there are all kinds of failures to follow American Family's policies. And I'm guessing, maybe this is wrong, that you don't define a failure to follow all of them is dishonest. It's only some. Is that correct?
That's correct. Not showing up to work wouldn't be dishonest. Not selling enough policies wouldn't be dishonest. But signing someone's name and misrepresenting to the company that they signed it in a situation where, if we take Connie's situation, that insurance policy was bound American Family without the proper signature.
Undesirable performance is another really clumsy phrase. Usually people say inadequate. Look, is your opponent right? Is Mr. Tennant right that there's a implicit cure requirement, opportunity for cure requirement in that paragraph?
No. It's only for undesirable performance. It says no notice, no 6 months notice is required.
No. I'm talking about when the 6 months notice is required. The undesirable performance provision. Does that imply an opportunity to cure?
It doesn't say that. The company will not...
No, it doesn't say it. Oh. But it's also goofy because you'd think they'd say, well, okay, termination on 6 months' notice. They say termination on 6 months' notice for undesirable performance. Why is that undesirable performance? Does this mean that people... that you have tenure if you don't, is it like tenure? You can only be discharged for cause?
No.
No?
What's
the force of undesirable performance?
I'm sorry, pardon
me. What's the force of undesirable performance?
The force of undesirable performance is if you're not performing...
No. Suppose you're performing great, but they want to fire you, can they, with 6 months' notice?
No.
So these people have a lifetime... Like judges, they have a lifetime
contract. If they're performing correctly,
I'm stunned.
If they're performing correctly,
fantastic.
And they haven't committed something dishonest.
Now you're going to have a lot of lawsuits.
Something dishonest.
So American
or contrary to law,
it's never laid off people because it had business reverses.
Well, that's a different situation.
Why is that a different situation? You just said they have tenure, unless they engage in undesirable performance.
The notice is also not required in the event the company terminates substantially all agreements of this type throughout the company or in a particular state of area. That would be cover a layoff situation.
Okay.
So, it's a contract issue. It's an interpretation of the contract. The things that they did were directly contrary to the contract, in addition to which they misrepresented to the company that people signed certain documents, that certain information was given to the company in Bonnie's situation where she took information from the insured, and that certain representations were made to that insured in Bonnie's situation. None of that happened. They knew it. They intended to do it. And there is no fact that in this record which indicates or from which a jury could determine that they were negligent or they made a bad judgment or they were careless. They knew what they were doing. They intended to do it. That's in the facts, and they did it. And they only fessed up when they were caught. But there are also other reasons why the summary judgment against them should be affirmed. And those are the other reasons, the other violations of the manuals and violations of law that we've set forth in our brief. You can read those. I don't want to go into those. But I did want to say a little bit about the plaintiff's allegations of pretext, which they make in their reply brief and which I haven't gotten a chance to talk about yet. They say that there were certain pretexts, that A woman by the name of Karen Anderson indicated that Bonnie had a problem with an upper management, and that was a reason for the termination of their contract. No facts in the record. Karen Anderson was not an executive. Her testimony is not admissible on that point. And the man who testified to that, Mr. Crumroy, was also, his testimony was also hearsay. Judge Guzman.
I think his name is pronounced Guzman.
Guzman. Judge Guzman entertained that objection and dismissed it, rejected it. The plaintiff argues that Mr. Burke, the person who reviewed the action, knew about some clashes. But there's no evidence that he either took into consideration, or, more importantly, there's no evidence that the person who did the terminating of the contract, Mr. Steffen, knew anything about any clashes or that that figured into his decision at all. Finally, they talk about, with regard to Ms. Bonnie's email situation, they talk about a hypothetical question that Mr. Tedders asked the head of marketing, and they say that that hypothetical was exactly how Bonnie did her emails, and that Mr. King said that's not solicitation.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. Our final case.